another episode of the Comedy Fix podcast, the podcast where Sam and I agree a lot and Jamie usually doesn't. We have talked about a lot of things so far. We've talked to a lot of people so far. This man right here holds a very special place in my heart. Because he's not just a comedy partner of mine. He's not just a friend of mine. He's somebody I genuinely look up to in whatever the hell it is we do here. Somebody who's probably the only person who knows more about improvisation than me. And that's just barely. He's wonderful. We've mentioned him on this podcast a handful of times. He's a member of Heyday. Give it up, everybody, for Peter Flouay. Hi, Peter.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
And as you know, Peter, I'm joined with by my two co-hosts, Jamie Parkinen and Samuel S. Miller. And they are also happy to have you here, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, Peter's our number one correspondent, I think. He's written in with so many great thoughts. It's awesome to have him on the show. Absolutely.
So what Sam's referring to is, like I mentioned, Peter and I are close. We message about a lot of things throughout any given day or any given week. We're in a movie club together. He went on a binge of the podcast and was just sending me the most incredible text messages and thoughts about each episode, which then I would share with you guys, and we had a great laugh. But they're funny because they're insightful and true. And I never disagree with you, Peter. That's the fucking thing. Although this might be the day. This might be the day. Now, we brought you on, Peter, with the idea of maybe discussing theme. Sure. And what theme is in the show. I get the feeling we might talk about other things, but let's start with theme. First of all, Peter, I think theme is a word that is used in improv so much, yet often misunderstood. That's my thought. I think people kind of, we all nod in the classroom or in the rehearsal. Theme. And then I think if you polled people after a show, Peter, you pulled each player after a show into a room and go, so what was the theme of that show? I think you might find 7 or 8 different answers. What's your immediate, you know, when you think of theme, what comes to mind, Peter?
I think theme is, one of the keys to a truly great show, but it's also the biggest trap in improv. Like, honestly, I feel like I personally love theme, but the way people talk about theme is, oh, you know, like, you've started your show and you've done your opening, so now we know what the theme is and we should just blindly follow this theme. But I agree with you, Chris. If you have 7 or 8 different players, you're going to end up with like 7 or 8 different versions of what the hell the show is supposed to be about. And my problem with theme isn't something that shows up at the beginning of your show. Theme is something that shows up in the last 6 minutes of your show. Theme is when we look back on everything that we've done and then see the connections that have been made. And then I think it's totally okay if you have 3 or 4 different opinions on what that theme is. Again, because I feel like theme is this weird trap that just gets people in their head where they're like, as opposed to focusing on the scene that they're in, they're like, oh, what's the greater meaning of this show? And the problem is you're not going to know what the greater meaning of your show is until, I don't know, you're like 80% done with the show.
And do you think you can, as a player, if you think you see a theme emerging, you're 85% of the way through the show, maybe it's time for callbacks or uber heightening of stuff we've already set up. Do you think you start to kind of, I don't know if the word is like manufacture it? Do you start to spell it out for the rest of the players in the audience? Are you doing
trouble with it? That's the trap. Yeah. Is that the manufacturer of like, oh, I get it. This show's about Love's Labor's Lost. And then you start making a bunch of moves to force that, and no one else knows what the hell you're talking about. And then everyone is left confused. And then you end up with like kind of a crappy ending to your show. Because part of the problem too, and something that I want to address about this show, how little you guys talk about how much time there is in a show on all of these issues that you talk about, which is like, man, the idea of being like, oh yeah, we're going to like have this concrete theme in a 22-minute show is kind of crazy, right? Where like, I feel like theme is a tool works best the same way that something like Point of View works best. If you think you know what the theme of the show is, play to that theme, but keep it interior. Keep it to yourself. Use it as a driving force to help guide you through the rest of the show, because that way, if you're being guided or being driven, or you're, motivated by something, like, oh, I think the show is about love, labor, loss, and that's how I'm going to keep approaching each one of these scenes myself personally, right? Then you're going to be making interesting choices, right? And in the end, those interesting choices will hopefully translate into a larger, more interesting show. Now, awesome if someone else on your team gets what you're going for, but you know what? Chances are they're not, mainly because, again, I love theme, but I'll just say 99% of the time, I feel it's completely played wrong. It's absolutely and completely played wrong, which is like, here's the key to fixing our show. If we all just make a choice in the opening that this is all about peanut butter, then that's the theme of our show, which peanut butter isn't a fucking theme, right?
And that's a great point. That's right? A great point.
And my other problem with theme is, when I ask people about theme, like, what do you think the theme of the show is? They'll give me a fucking paragraph of an answer. And a theme isn't a paragraph. It isn't three sentences. It shouldn't be more than a sentence. And hopefully it's a real simple sentence. Even better if it's just a single word.
Love,
dismay, even a word like retraction, I think is like a great theme, because you want to keep it simple enough that you're not limiting choices, that you're keeping the structure from becoming a prison and this theme from becoming a prison, and use it more as a doorway, right? And if everybody figures out like, oh, retraction, then yeah, you're going to have a brilliant show. Now, the fact of the matter is, again, like, the chances of that happening, out of 100 shows, you might have 10 that everyone ends up on the same page. But I'm more interested in how can I use any of these tools, such as theme, that I, the individual actor, can make more interesting choices as I'm performing, right? I don't need Chris. I don't need Jamie. I don't need Sam to be on the same page of what I think the theme of this show is. It's improv. It can be a lot of different things. But if I think this show is about retraction, and that's how I'm viewing the scenes that I'm doing and how I'm going to approach them without, like, again, with also being open to the other person and what they're doing and not like completely blowing them out of the water, then I'm going to be making more interesting choices. And in the end, like, I'll be a dick and just say, and then I've taken care of myself. At the end of this show, I'll know, well, I've done everything I can do. I've made interesting choices in this show. And hopefully everyone else has as well.
I think that's so cool. I mean, there's a lot that you're saying that I think we could spend the whole episode unpacking. A lot of our listeners don't know that Jamie is actually kind of dense, and I want to help him out here. Can we define theme? Because I come from like a writer background, and it's sort of notoriously difficult. I find everyone kind of has their own definition of theme. I think it's one of the reasons why it's so hard for everyone to get on the same page of what theme is. So how would you explain it to Jamie?
How I would explain it to Jamie is an overarching idea that winds its way through the entire piece. So, like, if I'm looking at a literary work, my dad had a great explanation of theme to me, that I could write a novel, and even if I was working my ass off to be like, this novel is not going to have any of me in it, because my writing is going to work through my subconscious, the themes that I keep repeating and I keep experiencing in my life will come through in that work regardless if I wanted to or not. And other people will be able to see it. So it's just an overarching idea. And in my opinion, the simpler the idea, again, so that we're not constraining or containing our performances or what we want to do as actors, the better. You know, but if you want to say like, hey, our theme is World War II was such a terrible time to be an Italian, like, that's too much. Whereas, you know, if I went war is hell, right? That's a theme that, like, you can carry through an entire show, and it's not really constraining you to anything. Because to me, I'm like, war is hell could mean 100 million things if you're creative enough.
And so are you, you were sort of talking about going into a scene with like retraction or war is hell in the back of your mind. And is that then sort of a leaping off point for maybe how you'd initiate or what your point of view would be as you sort of step into a scene?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I don't know. I hate the idea. And I know like we say this a lot of improv, which is like, come in there with nothing. Come in as this blank slate. And then just what happens happens. And I personally hated that advice. Don't like that advice. It's not that I can't go into a scene with nothing in my head. But I feel like if you come in with nothing and the other person comes in with nothing, then you're going to spend 35 seconds to a minute having nothing of just looking at each other and going, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? As opposed to like, and again, this is why I say in the ideas of theme, right? If I'm going to use it as a performer, I want to keep it as simple as possible, right? I don't want to have a paragraph. I don't want to have a book. I don't want to know where the show is going. I just want to know Love's Labor Lost, meaning, all right, I can take the word love. I can take the word labor. I can take the word lost. I can use any one of those three, use as a choice to initiate some sort of physicality or some sort of opening statement or to use it as a reaction. And if my scene partner gets what I'm putting down, great. If the rest of the cast gets what I'm putting down, even better. But the fact of the matter is, that's unimportant. My only goal is to create interesting scenes in the hopes by the end we've created an interesting show. Yeah. And again, you only have 22 minutes usually. So like to think about what is the show going to be all about at the top is insanity.
So, I mean, that makes me think, Peter, when I was a student chasing theme or the teams I've coached chasing theme, because basically because the way you're explaining it makes sense, but it feels like for a lot of people who are looking for the formula, there's not a lot to sink their teeth into in that. So that, I think that's why we get those shows where like every scene is based on machines are taking over. Or so we do a scene at the ATM and then we do one at the auto factory. Do you know what I'm saying? We kind of like, again, it's that kind of manufacturing, like we like manufacture like through lines. Sometimes teams will do that with edits even, right? We're all going to quack like a duck across the stage based on the opening. And that's going to give us a through line, which hopefully equals theme. But I don't know that it always does. But I can see how that is like a palatable or an actionable endeavor. Do you know what I mean?
Jamie, you're a part of this podcast. What are you thinking so far about this?
Oh, baby.
Is this a trap or is it a doorway? Or do you hate it entirely?
Well, it could be a trap doorway for sure.
I would say I'm having,
based on your definition of it, I'm having a hard time distinguishing it from pattern. Is there a difference between theme and pattern? Or do they function the same way?
No, I think they are different because a pattern is more mechanical than theme. Pattern is something that just gets repeated over and over and over again. I mean, with heightening and some exploration, whereas I feel like a theme is a little bit more inspirational is the only way that I can put it. Like if I'm in a scene and something happens and I know a pattern's going to happen, then I know I have to keep doing that thing and I have to keep heightening that thing, right? Whereas with theme, this idea of just being like, what do I think this show is about, right? The nice thing about theme is, again, because I'm not there's the theme of what I see so far in the show. And then at the end of the show, I'll be able to look at it and be like, I think this is what the show is about. But in those moments before the show has revealed itself, I look at it more as just almost like an interior suggestion. Or I think more importantly, what I'd like to say is actually using our openings as opposed to what my problem is. Most openings are just there because someone told you you have to do an opening and generate an idea. And my problem with a lot of openings is we are not going to think any further about this opening than the most base thing that we said. And we're going to replicate what we said on this stage.
Don't you think?
Yeah,
we all have something to say.
Go ahead, Chris.
Don't you think then audience members who drive home have that long conversation about the show they just saw, they probably can see theme maybe a little better. Like maybe. Maybe like the players from the inside can't see the trees through the forest. Is that the old saying? And somebody can be driving home and being like, oh, like even if you kind of manufacture connections between scenes or beats, if we're referring to the Herald, they could be like, oh, that was about like classism or something. Like, if you know what I'm saying? Like an audience member who's watching the piece as a whole might have a better takeaway of what they thought that show meant to them.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think my goal is, and I think what our goals should be, and I'm going to sound like a real fucking snob saying this, is our goal should be to create interesting shows so that conversation happens at the end of it, right? Which is why I say that, like, you as the team and as the cast or who's ever performing, when you have 8 minutes left in your show, you can't tell me that there isn't enough time with you being off stage or in the back line to go to have a thought and be like, what the fuck was this all about? Right? Was this all about anything? Can I make a choice? Right? And don't get me wrong, I agree with you. I don't want somebody to just manufacture it and be like, ugh, I got to put a bow on this fucking show. I guess it's about cars.
Yeah. Well, I've been guilty of that too, right? Where I think the theme is love. And so I'm pulling scenes together that don't have any business being together, being like, but the mailman loved the murderer the whole time. Yeah. To really shove that in there. Jamie and Sam, what do you, is there?
I feel like I'm talking a ton, guys. And I feel
it's great. It's great.
No, I've struggled with theme a lot. I came to it recently because I used to have this thing where I said, no one goes home and talks about how great the theme was. And I actually do think that's kind of true for like movies, for general audiences. Like no one goes into Fast and the Furious is like, man, I love how it's about family. But where I've kind of gotten to is that it is something that people resonates with them on a subconscious level. And so they can kind of feel when there's an absence of it and it feels kind of thin. And they might not necessarily think about it consciously, but they do kind of feel when the theme is there. But I'm also kind of struck with what Jamie said. If all we're doing is exploring and heightening a concept that we're repeating a few times, it does seem like theme is maybe related to a pattern. And I'm thinking of like a clown show that has a theme of failure would probably be really funny, but like every clown show is about failure. So that wouldn't want to be the theme there. I'll let Jamie get in, but I'll leave this Jamie, one more thought. Yeah,
go ahead.
I worked on Desperate Housewives for a while. And Desperate Housewives,
I got it.
I was an assistant. It was not that much, but I got to see the writing process a little bit.
Yeah, I'll get work. I got it. Cool.
Yeah. But that show was unique in a way because it started with this voiceover from the character Mary Alice, who is dead. And every week they'd have to kind of come up with a theme. And Mary Alice would say this sort of long speech over different images to introduce the four different stories that week. And they were always joking that like the theme kept getting reduced and one day it would just be flowers and that flowers wasn't a theme. And then sure enough, the episode came where the theme was flowers and they kind of had to manufacture it. So I think you're right. It can be a trap, but I also think there's a lot of depth there that can help people. Jamie, can you add or take away from any of that? Probably not.
To me, based on what's been said, I haven't really thought much about theme since like the fourth grade and like reading literature assignments. But I agree with you, Sam. I don't think theme is something that the audience will take away from a show. I think they'll take away maybe a message, you know, which I think maybe is different than theme. Maybe theme fosters the message, but I think they are distinct. And I do still kind of think that theme is maybe just a pattern. You know, it's a theme, it's a through line. Chris says through line, but through line to me just is pattern, right? It's a pattern throughout a show. And maybe it's not a peanut butter pattern because that gets reduced to the word pattern. But if it's about love, then it's not a pattern anymore. Now it's a theme, you know? So it's like peanut butter can't be a theme because it's too trivial, too thin, but love can be a theme because it's beautiful, it's human. I don't know what distinguishes a pattern from theme.
I'll come back on this, Jamie, which is why I think the difference between a pattern and a theme is, again, I think it's the mechanics of it, which is like, if you were to say, hey, love is our theme, but we treat it like a pattern, we are now going to see three scenes of different versions of people falling in love, or three different versions of a first date, that each first date gets heightened and gets worse, or gets heightened and gets better, right? And to me, that's like super uninteresting, right? I don't want to necessarily see that too, even though like technically you need pattern to make anything work. Whereas I look at love as saying, yeah, I want to see that first date scene. But then I also want to see the most selfish fucking person on earth be a complete fucking asshole to a barista at a coffee shop. And then I also want to see, you know, a guy selling diamonds and trying to get the best price for his diamonds. Looking at those three scenes, I wouldn't, like, being in an audience, I might not be like, oh, this is about love. But technically, one is about what we all imagine as love and what we're going to turn into a pattern. And like anytime you do improv, if you say love, guess what? You're going to have like a first date or last date or a wedding or a divorce. Like, here's the beginning of love, here's the end of love. As opposed to like really spreading out and exploring this idea, and more importantly, challenging your scene partner and being like, hey, okay, we're doing this diamond scene. Can you figure out what the fuck I love in this scene? Hint, it's probably fucking diamonds, but it's not going to be a fucking date scene, right? And then you build patterns on each of those things, right? Then you place the mechanics on top of this idea. But part of the problem is with theme is everyone goes, it's this, much like form, it's this quick fix that's going to give us a great show, right? It's going to make the audience feel connected and make them go like, oh, they really knew what they were doing. The problem is that like, again, as a, people aren't using it as like an exploration tool. They're using it as a way to fix a show, you know, which it isn't. Like if you're trying to use theme to be like, ah, we're going to fix our show with theme, it's bound to fail. The same way that it's like, ah, oh, man, if we do a Perfect Herald, that'll fix our show. Well, I've seen Perfect Heralds that were fucking terrible. That was boring as fuck. But guess what? They had three scenes, a game, a heightening of those three terrible scenes, another game, and then they all came together and connected all these terrible scenes. Right? And like, and I agree with you, Sam. More so, I would say, like, no one walks away going, what a great theme. No one walks away from an improv show going, what a great form.
Yeah.
No one goes, God damn. The scenes were terrible, but that LaRonde was perfect. Fuck you, man. Like, all of this shit should be, like, being used. All these high ideals should be being used to, like, create interesting scenes. Right? That's the whole fucking point. In some respects, I've been listening to this podcast for a while. I agree with Jamie. I'd rather have these audiences walk away with a fucking experience and talking about something than being like, holy cow, they did it. A perfect living room opening. That was boring as fuck. And then they didn't use anything from that opening. And then they just kind of did whatever they want and they were completely unconnected, right? Again, I feel like I'm totally over talking.
You're not. No, this is, it's interesting. Knowing you so well, Peter, and knowing Jamie and Sam so well, it would be really fun to watch this rehearsal, to be honest, to watch Peter work with you two guys. I just think there'd be interesting, I don't know, conversation. No, I don't know. I just, there's something really interesting about Folly and Peter Floyd. I can't put my finger on it. You know what I think it is, Peter, is that though you have a lot of experience in what I would consider traditional long form, the conversations we have, the fucking plays you've written, you really do like to, I'm going a little bit away from theme, pardon me, like to explore and experiment. And I think that that's like a lot of what makes these guys so special and fun. I don't know. You've heard this podcast now, you know them a little bit. Can you see why I think this would be a fun combination? Or I guess that'd be weird for anybody to be like, no, I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, I wish I could find the text that I sent you. I listened to one. I think it was the episode where you guys started trying, like, as opposed to yes and, it was going to be like no but, and then no no, and then yes and, but no, and all these different variations on it. And I loved this thought exercise, right? Because, like, to me, I'll say this, and Jamie, I'd love to hear your opinion on this. To a certain degree, I agree with you that, like, you don't need everybody to be saying yes and. Am I wrong in saying, though, that you do need everyone to be in agreement that we're going to say fuck yes and we're going to try a whole bunch of different things?
I don't think you need that. I do think people will get mad. I don't think you need that for the success of the art or the show. I think people will get mad that you're not playing by the rules they had in their own head.
Well, I'd say this. Where my point is, I think the only thing you need agreement on is the people that are performing on that stage, that we know going on that stage that we are not, we're kind of throwing away the rule book, right? We're going to explore things beyond yes and, right? Because I think, like, at the very least, you need agreement on that. Because I agree with you that I think, like, if you were just like, guess what? I'm not telling anybody. I'm just no-butting everything. Like, yeah, everyone's going to get pissed. But I think there is something very interesting about what Folly's doing, which is the two of you are in agreement that, like, there is a chance Jamie is going to go in a completely different direction and experiment with stuff. And it feels a little bit, listening to the podcast only, that Sam's job is to try to create or build some sort of structure around it. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
All right. How do you feel about that, Sam? Am I diagnosing it correctly just based on listening to the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, the conversations we have are like, I'm the white rice on the plate and Jamie is the lamb entree you come back for, right? Where, like, I have to lay some kind of a baseline so that he can go off on, like, an improvisational kind of flourish. And, you know, I can solo myself sometimes. But I think what makes us work is that there is a natural tension there where Jamie kind of always wants to go off. I wouldn't say there's a chance, like, he's going to, whereas, like, I'll always kind of be trying to do good improv, if that makes sense.
Now, let me ask you this. Jamie, do you guys ever flip roles? Are you ever the one that's like, I'm going to try to put a little structure on this? And Sam's like, see you later. I'm in a rocket ship. Dogecoin to the moon.
I can't specifically remember an instance of that. Usually if I've ever, like, put forth a structure, Sam is just so grateful and happy to have a structure that I can't think of any time where he's gone against it. I see him, we just play in the structure. Okay. Happily.
But I'd like to point out that I feel like that you guys together have an agreement on what, in a large general sense, is going to happen in your show, right? There's a couple of factors that we can understand, meaning that Jamie's going to experiment, Sam's going to create structure, or as best both of you can, right? So, like, for me, like, looking at a Folly show, and I wish I had the text, is when you were doing that exercise, I immediately wrote Chris, like, literally what I expected this Folly show to be, which was, I think the idea was Martians had come and taken you away to be examined. And then I was like, oh, I get it. Like, so, like, Sam's going to keep trying to make it about Martians and dealing with, like, the reality of being taken. And Jamie's going to go in his own direction. He's just going to say, like, no, we're now doing this. And what I loved about it is I do see, and I'm excited by this idea that you guys sometimes go off onto your own separate tracks that are living and existing at the same time. So I'm not doing a good job of giving my example of a Folly show, but I love this idea of one person's dealing with the alien abduction and the other person is like, holy cow, he's been abducted by aliens, but the only way that we can save him is if I can somehow push over this wall. And now I need the audience to use their mental powers to help this wall. And
that's pretty good accurate.
And yeah, so then as that's happening, one of the people is screaming at the audience going, work harder, you're killing him, you're responsible for his death. And then, you know, Jamie is dying more and more, and Sam is like throwing himself against the wall and begging and crying for this audience to save Jamie, and Jamie just keeps dying of cancer, right? And then in my mind, you literally you point at Chris, who's furiously writing notes on this Folly show, and go, he didn't believe enough. He killed Jamie. Everyone boo him. And then you get your entire audience to then boo Chris, who then like walks out of the show. And that to me was like, that's my imagination of a Folly show, of like, that would be the perfect completion of it. Like, you're completely fucking with the audience. You're making them involved in it. And to me, that's like super interesting. But then I would also say, like, I would look at that after Chris walks out, like, then me as the audience, I might be like, oh, you know, the theme of that show was guilt or shame. Right? But I wouldn't realize that until, again, the very end, as the audience member, as the performer, I would then like might be thinking like, oh, you know, this is about like, you know, accusation or guilt, right? And that's fine. Like, again, because if you're working from a place of like, I feel confident in an idea, you're going to just be working better on stage. I feel most bad performance comes from this place of being like, I don't know what to do. What's funny? What's right? What's grounded? Where am I in this Herald? As opposed to being like, Jesus Christ, do I just know how I feel about something at any given moment?
Peter, that was a beautiful description of a potential Folly show. We were all smiling and nodding our heads along because we think that would be a great show, I think. I'm not sure if I've ever told you this, Peter, or if I've ever mentioned it on the podcast, but during one rehearsal at the Complex on Sunset, Sam and Jamie were doing a scene. Jamie left the stage and then walked out of the door, right? Left the rehearsal room. So far, you know, as far as like bold moves, yeah, okay. Like, he's leaving Sam on stage alone. He walked to the door. That's okay. That's pretty cool. What happened next was something I'll never forget. A woman walked in and delivered a line in character to Sam.
What?
Dude. Sam responded. The woman exited. Jamie entered. I blacked out after that. This is correct, right, guys? I'm saying this accurately. It was, yes.
Yeah, I think just to like amplify it a little bit, Jamie had said he was going to get my girlfriend or something, or like a girl for me to date or something to that effect. I mean, it was very on game.
And when Jamie left the room, he found somebody in the hallway, fed her a line for her to recite. And she agreed to it and walked in and said that line. That shit I love.
Now, my favorite part about that story is that while Jamie was out of the room, I went to his backpack and I found a piece of gum. And so Jamie, after the woman goes out, Jamie comes in, we're chatting for a moment, and then Jamie catches that I was chewing his bubble gum. And I think it goes exactly to what you were saying, Peter, which is like, you both have to have something. And if you're both driving forward with something, when that collides, it can be a really magical kind of moment.
It's not can it be, it will be. The problem I feel like, again, I'm going to be super arrogant and snotty right now. I feel like the problem with 99% of fucking improv is people aren't coming in or holding on to anything. Right? Like, they're just like, they're so worried about like, is this going to get a laugh? Is this going to work? Is this going to make sense? As opposed to just like coming in and being like, you know what? I think this show is about, and I'm keeping this inside myself, but I think that this theme of this show is sports. I'm just using that as a fucking stepping stone. Again, that I can build a pattern off of. Jamie, I agree with you that you build patterns off of it, but you want to like have that first step, something to like, and I love this term grounding, right? Because here's the thing is like, you need something to ground you. That doesn't necessarily mean like you're always in a, you know, a diner in Kansas talking about your divorce.
Oh, right? Now you're talking to my speed.
Don't get me wrong. I'll do it.
Let me pause there. Why do you need something to ground you?
I would say this, Jamie, when you're doing your shows, when you're exploring, right, do you feel like you're floating off into space? Or do you find something that's driving you as you are making these choices to explore and possibly befuddle Sam or your audience? Do you feel like I'm just wandering around and I don't know where anything's going? Or does something move you?
No particular idea moves me.
Sure, but something's moving you. Something's driving you.
I guess my interest in that moment or my inspiration in that moment. So there's no like, oh, I'm looking for girlfriend or love bits. It's just like whatever. Oh, that person's wearing a funny hat.
Okay.
Oh, so I smell peanut butter in the room, you know, and then so it's almost stream of consciousness kind of thing. So I don't feel like I'm floating, but I think that's because I'm not looking for anything to ground me. You feel like you're floating if you're looking to be grounded. Right? Because if you're not looking to be grounded, you wouldn't notice that you're feeling like you're floating, right?
Okay. But I think like what I would say this is what's grounding is to you, and forgive me, I think what is actually grounding you is you are very comfortable in being in a place of a state of consciousness. Whatever's coming is what's I'm going to follow, right? That's your goal. Right? When you're coming into a show, based on what I've heard on the podcast, and correct me if I'm wrong, you want to come in and see what interests you. And if it interests the audience, great. If it doesn't, fine. I'm looking for something that's going to interest me. Right? Most performers are not coming in with that attitude. And I'm not saying your attitude's wrong. What I appreciate about your attitude, while to be fair, I don't necessarily know if I want to do a Herald with you. I do know that like at least you are being driven by something. You are coming into this show with a goal. It's a very personal goal of saying like whatever is going to like move me and move my flights of fancy, that's what I'm going to follow. I'm going to follow it, you know, I'm going to attack the fuck out of it. Right? Most people are coming into like their shows and their scenes going, okay, where are we? Who are we? Okay, we're in a bar. I better come up with a ridiculous beer name. I better have a crazy drink order. I better have a relationship because some teacher told me it's all the key to everything is relationship. You know, as opposed to like, if you're coming in being like, you know, I'm going to decide whether I like being in a bar or not. And if I don't, I'm fucking walking out of this bar and I'm doing something else. I feel like you are being grounded in, I am here to explore. Your theme is exploration. Right? Which leads you anywhere and everywhere. Right? Sam might be coming in with a completely different theme, which is like, and again, I'm just using broadly of being like structure. It's a singular word, but it's the idea of like, there's a million different ways Sam can attempt to try to like create some narrative sense to this audience to make them feel more comfortable. Right? And when those two things are colliding, you're going to get something interesting. And what I'm interested in is interesting scenes. Chris knows this about me. I would rather watch a perfect improv show as much as I would love to watch a complete train wreck. I hate the middle. I love shows that go horrifically wrong. But everyone is committed.
I've like, definitely heard Peter be the only, this is, and I'm talking years at iOS, I've definitely heard Peter be the only person laughing more times than I've heard Peter laugh with the audience. And he's not laughing, he's not making fun of the people on stage. He's loving the commitment to even the train wreck. Is that right, Peter? And I have laughed together. We look at each other, we're the only ones laughing.
No, I love commitment to the absolutely wrong choice you could make. Like, that, like, I love watching a team try to support, protect, and uplift each other. And every single day choice they make to do that is only making this show worse. Right? But they put in 110%. They're taking all their training to the fullest. Right? But literally, they're coming in and being like, I know how to save this scene. Well, Marcy got an abortion 2 months ago. That's why she got money. And I always sat in the balcony at iOS because when I was doing Groundlings, I was told by my instructor, I should never watch an improv or comedy show anywhere within the first four rows because my whole body reacts to it. I don't like something, it's super clear and actors can see I don't like it. When I love something, it's really clear. And my thing is, like, I'm so tired of okay shows and nobody giving any fucking thought to their show. I mean, I haven't seen a Folly show yet, but listening to the podcast, you guys do put thought into your show, right? Like, it may not always work, but you guys have made a decision, like, we're going to think about what we're going to do, and we're going to see if we succeed or fail at it, and we're going to push boundaries, and I love that thought. Most teams come up and being like, awesome, for 22 minutes, I get to be on stage, and they don't fucking think anything more about it.
Dude, that is so right on. Even in their approach, these guys rehearse more than any team I've ever seen rehearse. And both Zach Huddleston and Amanda Blake Davis have a story that one day, Zach was leaving and he ran into ABD and she was walking in to rehearse with you guys. Or I don't know if it was those two, but it was two people. They had back-to-back rehearsals like that. They've worked with clown instructors. I won't speak for you, but you... Peter, you're absolutely right, because this would be a different story if it was two guys just like trying stuff, like just that. No, they're like putting the work in there, and it's really fucking fun. Although this is not, yeah.
But here's the thing: this is why like theme is such a trap, and why like I don't blame Jamie for being like, isn't it just patterns? I vehemently disagree with that. Like, and I'll fight on that to my death. But my problem with it is like what we're really talking about is, yeah, you can use theme if you're going to think about your actual show. Like, if you're actually going to put the work into your show to be like, we are going to try to do something. We are going to think about the voice of this show and we're going to try and experiment things. Then I say, like, go crazy on theme. Like, if you were all performers, were to in the green room and nothing against warmups, but instead of everybody doing zip, zap, zop, literally put a challenge to everybody and say, like, by the last 10 minutes of this show, can we all try to be on the same page of what the fuck this show is about? Right? Just to maybe inspire people to make bigger, bolder, clearer choices within that show. That's not only going to make them have a better show, but create a better experience for the audience. Because again, it doesn't need to be wildly funny. I like it when it is. But I'm more interested in, is this just going to be fucking interesting?
Well, Oh, go ahead, Sam.
No, I was just going to say, you know, one thing we were playing with for a while is we shared like a History of the Day article the day that we were performing or whatever. And just having that much information as opposed to just like a word, right? There were so many different ideas that we could pull out of that one thing. We all came kind of loaded into the show with stuff. So it wasn't necessarily like we found something at the end, but just having a little more to go into it was super helpful.
I think, yeah. That's true, Sam. We experiment with a lot of different openings and initiations. But what I wanted to say to you, Peter, was that what's interesting to me, and I think maybe this is where the trap of theme comes in, as you were referring to, is that the theme, if you set a goal for the team that in the last 10 minutes, we all try to get on the same page about what the show is about, I don't think that's going to make people make stronger choices. That's going to make them uncertain because they don't know if everybody else is on the same page with them. I think better to say, you make a decision about what the show is about, as opposed to trying to get on the same page with other people and get inside their brains about what the show is about.
I think you make a great point. And on this, I'll totally give it to you. I think you are explaining a better way to do it, which is like, you make a decision on what you think the show is about. My hope would be, and I'll just say this and clarify, my hope would be as everyone's making strong decisions, it becomes clearer that you could conceivably get eight people closer to the same page, right? But I do agree. I think it would be better in the thing to be like, everybody do your best to like make a choice on what the fuck you think this show's about and play that choice as hard and as varied as you can, and see, almost make it a game of being like, and see if we think when we get done with the show, if we all sit down and talk, could I figure out what I thought Chris thought the show was about? Could I figure out what Jamie thought the show was about? You know?
Yeah.
because again, like the trap of like form and theme, and I would say things like point of view and yes, and I feel they're all important, but they're all also traps because people look at them as like, here's this cure-all. This one idea is what's going to make my show work or make me funnier. As opposed to being like, it's a tool, right? But it's a useless tool if we're not giving any thought into what we're actually doing with our show.
Right. And
things like how long is our show? How long have we all been doing this? Right? There's no point in talking about theme to someone that's been doing improv like 2 years. It's ridiculous to even bring it up. It's literally like, how about you guys just get comfortable being on stage and stop turning your back to the audience? And please stop ordering burritos in a crazy Mexican accent. No one gives a shit. Like, how about you start getting comfortable in who you are? Right? Because in the end, what we're trying to do, and I, at least my opinion is, I don't know if we're actively thinking about it, is I look at improv as an exploration of self done in a group setting. You're only doing this to find out more about yourself. It just happens to be you're doing it against other people, right? So when I think about things like theme, I think about like, why don't I know what it's going to be to the end of the show? Because I don't know who the fuck I'm going to be by the end of this show. It's like a therapy session, right? I don't know what I was talking about with my therapist until the last 10 minutes when she suddenly goes, I guess you're mad at your dad. I'm like, oh, fuck, yeah, I guess everything that I was talking about kind of led to this.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, it's so interesting you keep bringing up form because I think the moment where theme really clicked for me was realizing how theme can influence structure and how it should and how, like, in King Lear, if it's about a father's blindness, one father actually gets blinded literally at one point and sort of playing with the figurative and the literal there. And that's the kind of thing I aspire to. I think it's maybe easier to do in written material. But it's interesting because you're talking so much and it feels like you have a very Harold-centric position, because I think this gets a little different with like the improvised movie, right? If I'm doing a romantic comedy, every one of those things is going to be about love. So maybe I have to find a little bit of a different nuance there in like the improvised romantic comedy, or deconstruction builds thematic scenes into it. But having done it for a while, I think we always failed at those. I don't know.
Well, Sam, I coached you a few times and I adore you guys. You did fail at it.
Yeah. Peter, don't, I need you to say this. I only have two words written in front of me, but it was about this topic right here. It was about coaching that lovely team who was working hard. I'm just going to give you these two words, math and algebra. Peter, do you remember what you said to me about that? In regards to some teams that
I have a general sense because I know where
we're headed. Listen. I think you just, I think you just said it just randomly, like, meaning you just came up with it in the moment, which is where you're just so smart that way. You were like, I don't even think it was about the team specifically, Sam, but it was about doing the deconstruction. And Peter goes, yeah, we're gonna perform an algebra problem for you tonight, but we're not good at math. Something to that effect. I'm like setting up something so like complex and all these moving parts and stuff, but
we're not good at numbers. Numbers are not our strong suit.
It would have been great for a clown show. Clowns would be great with that, but we weren't clowning.
Yeah, but I think that's, again, I think I would say, like, even in an improvised movie, I think like ideas like theme can still work. My point is, I think when it comes to form is literally just math. It's a way of creating a whole bunch of building blocks that hopefully get to an ideal solution of an interesting show that an audience can follow, right? But again, much like we were talking about before, no one walks away going, God damn, that form. Right? The form only fucking shines if the things that live in that form, like all a form is like, it's my apartment with furniture in it, but it's got none of the lived experience in it. My apartment is super boring unless I'm in it with my wife and other people coming to visit and how we live and express ourselves in this space, right? I have no issue with a team that goes, we don't want to do an opening, we just want to do a montage. If they're actually going to do interesting scenes and push themselves and challenge themselves, right? But they don't. They're just being lazy, which is, ugh, well, I don't want to remember three scenes a game, and we wrap it all up in the end. That math is too hard, which to me is like, you're a fucking idiot then. three scenes a game, and you're done. Like, I never had a fucking problem with form, because form doesn't fucking matter if you have interesting scenes. If you're doing interesting scenes, you should be destroying your form as you go along.
Okay, I have to ask, because you used the word interesting a million times. What makes an interesting scene?
Okay, what makes an interesting scene is somebody giving a shit about fucking something.
So commitment?
Commitment, yeah, commitment. I don't necessarily need... Again, I don't need a diner in Kansas. I would prefer literally to watch the Folly show that I created, which is, I would love to see Sam committed saying, you're killing Jamie. You don't believe in him enough. You're not giving enough mental energy. Fuck you people. You evil fucking people who don't fucking believe in this art form. And now you're killing my friend. Oh, it was our director killing our fucking friend. Everyone boo our director.
Jamie would love that.
You know, like that so commitment to saying, like, I am here to, like, part of it is, like, we can say fuck the audience, but they are there. And the very least we need to give them is something interesting. They don't necessarily need to like it. Like, they don't necessarily need to be being like, ha-ha, I feel good. I don't mind if they walk away feeling like, oh, fuck you guys for fucking with my head this way. Right? But if the two of you have made the decision before the show and said, like, hey, you know what? If the audience leaves feeling a little pissed, a little confused, that's what we're going for, cool. But no teams, or I should say the majority of teams, aren't giving that any thought. Their thought is coming in being like, get me through these 22 minutes. I hope I get six laughs.
And whose problem is that, Peter? Because I am genuinely sparked by that fucking, by the Folly scene you've just came up with. I love it. I love it a lot. I even love, because it is very reminiscent of stuff Folly has done. Jamie has made fun of me during rehearsals in the middle of the shows. It's just so good. So who's stopping people from doing these? Is it training centers?
Well, the training centers. Yeah. I mean, I think part of it's blame goes all the way down. But I would say, like, the first responsibility is the performer. Because I feel like a lot of performers, and again, I'm going to come across like an asshole, and that's okay. A lot of performers, again, I feel like are looking for this solution to this problem of how do I become funny, and then how do I, like, turn that into bankable dollars, and I become famous, and I end up on SNL, right? So then they go to this training center, and this training center goes, we focus on game. Game is how you solve all of your comedy problems. Well, guess what? It doesn't fucking solve all your comedy problems, because if you're not fucking good at game and you're not willing to do exploration in game, you're going to be fine. Like, you're going to be okay, right? Or, oh, we're just going to do everything character-based. Cool. Like, but some people aren't fucking great at characters. That's not their voice. And also, like, you're also, like, creating these ridiculous limitations, right? Now, the biggest problem of what I'm talking about is I trained everywhere. And everybody told me they had the secret to how to make this work. And all I learned was you kind of need all of it and none of it to make it work. You need to, like, experience it all to figure out what the fuck you like and what you don't like. Like, listening to the Jackie Dorothy episode, I can't do, like, I don't naturally do characters like she does, right? She literally comes from a very physical, vocal place, and that's what drives her and guides her, and that's where her commitment comes from, right? But because she's performing that way and she's so comfortable in performing that way, if I was to say to Jackie, like, hey, let's figure out what our theme is by the end of this show, she's so confident and comfortable in doing what she does, she has the brain space to maybe 10 minutes before the end of the show go, yeah, I can think about what the fucking theme is. Right. But everyone's, again, like going, well, am I doing the Second City way? Am I doing the West Side way? Am I doing the UCB way? Am I doing the IO way? As opposed to being like, try all these fucking things and figure out what the fuck your voice is. Right? Like, learn how to do it all so then you can throw away the things that don't necessarily work for you. Is that making sense? Because I feel like I'm an avalanche of words.
No, dude, this is, it's great.
Yeah, I think one of the real challenges and why I feel so lucky to work with Jamie is that when you're on a team with 8 people, you don't want to piss this other 7 people off, right? And it's so hard to kind of get 8 adults together in a room to agree on something that when you finally do kind of do that, you either end up making compromises with the people you're doing with it, or you make a compromise on what your artistry is going to be. And at a certain point, especially I'll say year 2 to year 5 or so, you're really closing yourselves off, right? There's like a hard fourth wall up there. You're focusing on a form, you're focusing on hitting concepts, and we lose a lot of that play. And I think what I really love about Jamie's approach is it's a little bit of this added chaos. And I think that's kind of what you're saying too, which is like, don't just follow what everyone's doing, have your own inspiration, mess something up a little bit or do something wrong purposely, because if you commit hard to it, that's really funny and a lot of fun for the audience.
Yeah, I think where we fail, like in training centers and instructors, is the way that we throw groups together is ridiculous, stupid, and terrible, right? And I think my feeling is, and this is a little bit harsh because I love every single community that I'm a part of as far as improv and sketch. Like, I love the Groundlings. I love iOS. I love Second City. I love UCB. I love West Side. I love all these places. Like, they've been so welcoming to me, and they are wonderful communities. But I have a problem because there's a difference between building a community and building a great show. There's a difference between building a community and if you want this to be art, it can be art. But you have to kind of like want it and think about it, right? And it, like, I have no qualms with people going, hey, I just want to be funny for 22 minutes. That's great. You don't need to like blow my mind. But then like, you should at least be funny for 22 minutes. If that's your goal, you know, like, and my feeling on it is like, then if your goal is to be funny for 22 minutes, why don't you commit to something for 22 minutes? You have all these tools to give you something to commit to. And it can really be anything. If you want to commit to theme, don't force all your other players to do that too. Just use it for your fucking self. If you're a character, then do character, you know, but like choose something, right? And when I say choose something, don't write your fucking show before you get step on stage. Just be comfortable in the fact that, like, when sometimes when I play with Chris, I know that, like, my goal of the evening is sometimes, I'll say it like this, sometimes I'm playing with Chris and sometimes I'm playing against Chris, meaning like I look at playing with Heyday as like a pickup basketball game. And sometimes we're playing against the audience and we're going to beat them and we're going to crush them and we're going to devastate them. We're going to show them moves they've never fucking seen before. They're going to leave that fucking theater feeling like, wow, we just got the shit kicked out of us and we respect these people for doing it to us. And sometimes when I'm on Heyday, I'm not playing against the audience. I'm playing against other performers. I'm saying like, I'm in a mood tonight where like I want to play against Chris and I want to challenge Chris because I'm just in the kind of mood where I want to see what he's going to do. How hard can I push him? How hard is he going to push me? And we've done that a million times. There's been times like I've come out being like, I can't wait to be an accountant. And Chris has thrown me to the floor and put a pretend gun to my head and been like, if you don't give me your money, I'm going to rape you right now. Right. And I'm like, well, cool. I'm playing against Chris tonight. And that's not a bad thing, because now my goal is like, now I need to commit. And not only that, I need to make a more interesting choice than being like, yes, rate me, or excuse me, I'm an accountant. Excuse me, I'm an accountant. Right? Like, and I think that's where things get a bit lost and tricky, which is like, there's just this thought of, we're just going to do a funny show, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they're not committing to like really doing a funny show. They're kind of letting this show happen to them, as opposed to, and I coach a lot of teams where it's like in the rehearsal, they're crushing it. They're killing it. And why? Because they're trying so hard to make their teammates laugh in that rehearsal. They're so hard to put their teammates on their back foot in that rehearsal. But on stage, they won't do that. They're like, oh, I guess we better do the frozen yogurt shop, because I bet that's going to bring some belly laughs. And then when we hide in it and we're on a frozen yogurt shop on the moon, boy, that's going to like bring some less laughs. And then guess what? Frozen yogurt shop in heaven. And then Jamie's going to be a dick after the show and be like, I guess our theme was frozen yogurt.
I figured it out.
It's a fucking trap. And Peter will be like, I agree with you.
Like, here's what it is, Peter. You don't need to coach Foley. You need to sit in on a performance.
I don't need to coach. Like, here's my feeling is, like, as far as coaching goes, as a coach, I'm much more interested in, and I think this does come to theme. Like, I use theme as a way of like trying to figure out what your personal voice is. Right? Like, why are we doing this is because we want to be funny, right? Or we want to create an experience for the audience, but it's always a singular expression of ourselves, right? Like, I love group work. I love connecting with my teams, but in the end, I'm coming from a place of realizing early doing it that, and maybe it's because I started at Groundlings and everything was super competitive and you kind of had to fucking take care of yourself if you wanted to keep moving through the levels, right? Is that like, again, much like with Chris, I have the same with Chris, which is sometimes I'm playing with people, sometimes I'm playing against people. And when I'm playing against people, that doesn't mean I'm trying to like make them look bad or ruin their scenes. But what I'm trying to do is force them and force myself to like come up to a different level. Can we make a more interesting scene happen? Even if it's painful, even if it's uncomfortable, even if there's complete failure in that. And the fun thing about playing that way for me is I love getting beat as much as I love winning. I've beaten Jamie Moyer at a scene one time. That bitch has fucking kicked my ass 100. That doesn't mean I don't stop trying to get one over on fucking Jamie Moyer. It just means I have to keep trying and finding different things and exploring different things. Does that make sense? Now I feel like, okay, that's how I end all my teaching sessions. Am I making any sense or am I?
What I think is great about that is I think it's a lot of the energy that we talk about where we are playing against each other and there is a competition both between the characters and the actors themselves. And like that, I think that creates some of the commitment that you're talking about when you care about that in the scene, whether it's supporting them or dunking on them. I think that's a really fun way to play.
Yeah, I agree. I want to add to that because I think everything, Peter, that you were saying is great. And I agree with Sam. I never thought about this before, but I think you're right that when you play against somebody, either a teammate or the audience, or maybe the director or coach, that kind of, it engages you in the show. It makes you have to commit harder. You can't challenge the other person and then kind of just walk away in a sense. It kind of invests you in the show to have, I guess, an opponent in a sense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, and I'm not saying always play with an opponent. I'm not saying everyone be like me. I have my own issues and why I'm super competitive this way. Cause like all I ever heard from a lot of people was being like, why are you so competitive about improv? We're just a family and we're a community. And my feeling was like, yeah, we are that, but like, God damn it, do I want to have fucking better shows? and, you know, and sometimes some people that I absolutely adore as people, I wasn't getting the shows that I wanted with those people because we were being like, we're super cool with each other and we're never going to challenge each other, right? And they ended up being boring shows. Whereas, like, if I put them in a friendly and respectful adversarial position, it makes me commit. Like, as a coach, I coached a team called Linoleum City at Iowa West. And I thought they were one of the most talented, well, I'll just say it. I mean, I think they were the most talented team I ever coached. Like, they were amazing. And in rehearsals, they took a very fuck you attitude to me. Like, it became very, like, friendly, adversarial, but very confrontational, where I'd be like, hey, how about you guys try caring about something? And then they would commit so hard to caring about anything other than the other person in that scene, just to say, fuck you, Peter, right? And they would end up having these amazing scenes. Why? Because they had made a choice to care about fucking something. And what they cared about was saying, we want to, like, make Peter roll his eyes and go, well, that's a choice, because they liked hearing me say shit afterwards. And they would, like, do that. And what was great was they were able to translate it into interesting shows, you know? And also, it's fun being in an adversarial relationship. And again, I say, always be respectful, appreciate these people. You're not trying to destroy them. You're trying to, like, bring out the best of them and also create interesting scenes. It was also fun because sometimes watching them fail on stage when they didn't take one of my notes felt like a great victory for me. Like, I was like, ooh, I can't wait to give them that note that just pretending to be on a fucking scooter and talking gibberish was gonna go nowhere because they didn't really care about being on a scooter and speaking gibberish. This is gonna be sweet. Right? And then we'd all have a good laugh about it. But then they'd show me 3 weeks later a scooter scene where they just spoke gibberish and they fucking gave a shit. They were literally like, we're gonna, like, confuse our audience, but we're going to work really hard to confuse them, and we're really committed to confusing them, and the goal is to confuse them, and the theme of this is confusion. Right?
Yeah.
So my thing is, like, even if you're, like, a year one improv student, put some thought into your show beyond I just want to be funny, but don't, like, make a crazy, like, theme or form or anything. Literally just be like, I just am going to make a simple choice on something. You know, I'm just a farmer who likes the sky, and I'm just going to stay fucking committed to that for a year one student. That'll fucking, you know what? You'll look like a goddamn rock star. You know, but if you've been doing it 5-6 years, hey kid, you better start fucking working harder. Because we're all bemoaning the fate of where improv is and where the hell is it going and should it be thrown away and should long form be destroyed? No, it shouldn't. But we also haven't been really giving a shit about it for the last 8 years. We all said, well, there's UCB, there's Iowa West. We're going to pick our little clique. We're going to pick our little club. That's going to show us the way. And we're not going to, like, argue with it. And we're going to hope in LA that we're going to get, like, notice and get our fucking development deal, as opposed to, like, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, but I'm like Jamie, I'm back to being a hobbyist at this. So I think about this, like, I have a regular job. I'm fucking covered. So I think about this shit all the time, which is like, why am I spending my time on a Wednesday night at 11 in the evening to just walk out on stage in shorts and flip-flops, you know, and do be like, hey, I'm the salty fisherman. I swear a lot. Dude, I'm married. I've been married a long time. If I'm going to be making that kind of commitment, fuck yeah. I want to be working harder. And when I say work, the most enjoyable way, which is like, I want to be challenged, or I want to be challenging other people. If that's the audience or the other people on my stage, great. But I don't think most people are putting that much thought into it. And my thing is, I'm not asking you to, like, revolutionize comedy. I'm asking you to create a more interesting show than 90% of the shows that I'm seeing. And because most of them are literally going, we are straining and working so hard for a laugh, where if I just fucking said something that the audience believed I believed in, you're gonna fucking get a reaction. because I don't give a shit if an audience laughs. My favorite shows is when I've made an audience like literally go, ooh, or an audience go, fuck you, dude. Like, those are great fucking shows, especially if you can make them laugh and also do those things. Have I answered the question on theme?
I've seen you do all that on stage, Peter. All that. Yeah, I don't actually recall you having a meh scene.
No.
I mean, it might fucking go down in flames, but you're sweating when you're picking yourself up off the fucking stage and walking to the wings. Do you know what I mean? Man, dude, Peter, I knew I was going to learn a little something, or I knew I was going to enjoy this hour for sure, but you fucking pumped me up, dude. You fucking genuinely pumped me up, and that is surprising to me. Not that I don't think you're capable of doing it, but because, like you said, you kind of landed in hobbyist zone, which I don't think actually fits you, but meaning you have a full-time job now. So I just didn't think you were going to have this much fucking fire behind it. I thought this podcast would have been great if you told us with all of your years experience what theme means to you. And that would have been nice. Instead, you fucking pumped me up, dude. Like, genuinely fired me up. Thank you for that. That doesn't happen to me a lot.
Yeah, really sorry that I talk so much, though. I feel like Sam and Jamie are part of this podcast as well as you, Cliff. And I gave you guys no room. No room to breathe or ask questions.
We didn't...
There are two episodes that Jamie does where he's either quiet because he really disagrees with what people are talking about, or he's quiet because he agrees. And I don't mean to speak for him, but I feel like this was a good episode for both of us to listen to.
Yeah, no, this was a really interesting episode. I appreciate your perspective. I do agree with a lot of what you're saying, and you gave me some new nuggets to think about, which is why we have this motherfucking podcast in the first place.
And I was surprised, if I'm being honest, I was surprised to talk to Peter in person for the first time in a year and a half the other day to hear how much he agreed with you, Jamie.
Well, he's smart.
On certain points here or there, I was like, whoa, okay. That was fun for me to hear.
People who are smart and care about the art form agree with us.
You know, I agree with you 60% of the time, Jamie.
That's more than most people.
Sometimes you're a real lawyer on this show. Where
what? When?
Literally, there was one time I was looking at the podcast and I texted Chris being like, he's trying to lawyer his way out of this. Don't let him. That's it's an a ad-hoc. Trap. He's trying to make you define a word with a definition in a dictionary. Don't keep playing this game with him. He's trying to put you down a blind alley.
It's an ad hominem critique, and I don't hear any substance behind it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Geez, this is fucking great. Peter, I will continue to love you as a friend and a performer. You just mean so much to me. Thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you? Find stuff.
Hey, I'm at Peter Fluet everywhere. It's F-L-U-E-T. I'm the only Peter Fluet, I think, in the country. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you'll easily find me. I don't have anything necessarily to promote at the moment. I just want to say thanks so much for having me on the show. To all you listeners, where can you find theme? You find it within yourself. Make a small, easy choice. Keep it to less than a sentence. And you know what? You're going to be fine because you don't need other people to see the same theme as you do. Fuck those people. Just make a fucking choice, everybody.
Oh, Jamie, where can people find you?
Oh, I've been answering messages recently on at the Comedy Fix.
Very nice.
So if you reach out there, sometimes I'll pop in and say, hey.
And should we tell the people that... you and I answer messages. Sam would like to, but we've forgotten the password. I don't know the password.
Yeah, you were either in from the beginning or Sam's just been excluded. He's just been excluded by default.
I might stout. It's you can hit reset password, but it's just not going to happen.
Sam, we have an 8-month long text chain that you could scroll through to try to find it. I'm sure it's there.
I'm not doing that.
Okay, Sam, but where can they find you if they want to get in direct contact with you?
You can find me on Twitter. I just found something today, a woman who was translating century-old French plays, but worked as a school teacher, and she was in New York in the 50s and, like, putting her on productions and, like, sewing her own costumes. And she put so much care into it as a hobby. And, like, that's where we have to get back to. So find me on Twitter.
All right. And you can find me at Chris Alvarado. If you want to take a class with me, if part of the episode tonight when Peter twice mentioned diners in where? What state did you say?
Kansas.
If you want to do fucking scenes that take place in diners in Kansas, you go to chris-alvarado.com/workshops and you talk to me, baby. We're going to slow that motherfucker down. Diner scenes only. Otherwise, reach out to us at The Comedy Fix.
I can only recommend doing diner scenes. I took Chris's workshop. It was fantastic. I recommend everyone check it out. You know, not heavy on theme, but man, good, solid work.
Thank you. Sam?
I just love the idea that, like, there's an improv team named Barry Levinson and their form is the diner, and that's just, like, what they're going to do.
Sam, let's talk about lunch.
Yeah, we got to stop. Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening.